1 Peter 3:15 says, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence." This verse from Peter's first epistle is often cited as a basis for the work and ministry of apologetics. Rightly understood, we are exhorted by the apostle to be prepared at a moment's notice to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. This assumes a number of things. First, that we recognize that all disciples of Jesus are expected to share the news of God's forgiveness through faith in the finished work of Jesus Christ. The second reason this verse is important to consider is because it actually encourages us to memorize Scripture. Chances are you don't carry a Bible with you 24/7, so having Scripture memorized will enable you to always be ready. Third, this exhortation assumes that we've taken the time to understand the thinking that characterizes the day in which we live. Would you know how to respond to someone who says, "Well, this gospel of Jesus stuff works for you, but it doesn't do anything for me"? What would you say to someone who says, "Christianity is nothing more than a crutch for the weak-minded"? Finally, Peter's admonition in this verse to make a defense or a presentation of the gospel of Jesus Christ instructs us to view the apologetic task as one that is done with gentleness and reverence. This is one aspect of the apologetic mandate often overlooked. We will never win anyone to Christ through a heated exchange that engages the emotions only. My guest today has devoted his life to the apologetic task of presenting the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyone who will listen. Stay tuned for my conversation with noted author and apologist Sean McDowell next on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Welcome, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. My guest today is Dr. Sean McDowell. He's a gifted communicator with a passion for equipping the church, and in particular, young people, to make the case for the Christian faith. Sean is a graduate of Talbot Theological Seminary with a double master's degree in theology and philosophy and earned a PhD in apologetics and worldview studies from the Southern Baptist Seminary. He is an assistant professor in the Christian Apologetics Program at Biola University. Sean is the author, co-author, or editor of over 18 books, including The Fate of the Apostles, A New Kind of Apologist, Same-Sex Marriage, A Thoughtful Approach to God's Design for Marriage, co-authored with John Stonestreet, Is God Just a Human Invention, co-authored with Jonathan Morrow, and Understanding Intelligent Design, co-authored with William Dembski. Sean has also written multiple books with his father, Josh McDowell, including The Unshakable Truth, More Than a Carpenter, and Evidence for a New Generation. He is the general editor for the Apologetics Study Bible for Students. He has also written for Youth Worker Journal, Decision Magazine, and the Christian Research Journal. Sean blogs regularly at SeanMcDowell.org. Welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio Show, Sean.
Mike, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing. I've been looking forward to this as well. You and I share a passion for apologetics. You've been asked this Well, I'm just going to guess, but probably 1,000 times if once. But growing up, a son of Josh McDowell, was there ever a chance that you would choose a career path other than an author and apologist?
I have been asked that 100 times, but I think it's a great question, and it's an important question. It might surprise some of your listeners, but my parents never expected or pressured me to go into apologetics, to write books, to speak, to work with youth in any capacity. In fact, a big encouragement my dad would just give me is he'd say, son, use the gifts and abilities that you have to build up God's kingdom. Yeah. And however you do that, if you're using your gifts, or, you know, to love God and love other people, your success. Now, certainly my dad was thrilled and excited when I showed interest in apologetics and writing, and we really enjoyed doing some projects together, but there really never was that expectation from my parents, which is probably one reason I chose it. I think if my parents had that expectation, you know, it might have made me want to go a different direction, ironically enough.
Yeah, I can imagine that would have been difficult for your dad. I'm placing myself now in his place and trying to imagine not, even subtly, encouraging my children to follow in my footsteps. So kudos to your dad for allowing the Lord to lead in that career path. As I mentioned in your bio, Sean, you're also a professor at Biola in the apologetics program. I'm very interested, and I think our listeners are too, in hearing about that role, and also what about that appeals to you the most?
Well, we have the largest apologetics graduate program in the world. It was ranked number one of its kind, and what I love about it is we just have some remarkable students. I mean, we have doctors, lawyers, teachers, pastors, youth pastors, business people, airline attendants, people in the military, stay-at-home moms, you name it. We just have a variety of people that are new to apologetics and also people that have been doing it a long time. Yeah. We just have a heart to learn this stuff and then go help the local church. So if I can equip, encourage, get to know them, it's really an honor and it's a treat. It's a lot of fun. What I also love is our program is a distance program. So we have people from some people even internationally, in London, in Latin America, in parts of Africa, and they'll come out a couple times to campus for a short visit. But we actually offer through online and through distance a high-quality, interactive, apologetics degree for people around the world who don't have the time to leave their job for 2 years and come get a master's. They can still come study with us at Biola. So it's fun to just see people learn this truth, take it and go run with it, and make a difference in their own communities, in their own churches.
Yes, and I would encourage our listeners, by the way, Sean, what is Biola's website where they can go get more information?
You know what? Just Google Biola Apologetics.
There you go.
Biola Apologetics would be the simplest way to get right to our website. Biola, again, and then Apologetics.
Apologetics, yeah. That'll take you right there, and then you can find all the information that you want. It's a great program. I know a brother in another church here in Lima that just completed the master's program in apologetics. It's very well respected in the field, by the way. Well, so apologetics. And I'm going to borrow an analogy from Rabbi Zacharias. This has stuck with me for many years. He said the whole intent and purpose of apologetics, it's not to have a silver bullet to shoot down every argument or objection that someone may have, but instead apologetics and utilizing apologetics tools and arguments, defenses, is to answer objections, provide a reasonable response in order to remove every obstacle from someone's path so that they can see the cross of Jesus Christ clearly. And that really is the whole point of learning apologetics, isn't it, Sean, to be able to present the gospel?
That is so well stated by Ravi, and it doesn't surprise me knowing who Ravi Zacharias is. But I, interestingly enough, I wrote a book called Apologetics for a New Generation. I interviewed philosopher and apologist J.P. Moreland. I asked him that question. I said, what's the point of apologetics?
Yeah.
In his response, he said, look, it's just one ministry, the church, an important ministry, where we clear away objections so people can see Jesus for who he is.
Yes.
That's it.
That's it.
So, you know, if somebody's heart or mind is closed, we can't force somebody into the kingdom. Mm-hmm. It's not to humiliate people to win arguments. It's, number one, to be faithful to scriptures because we're commanded to have an answer. And number two, it's a way of loving people by building up Christians so they gain confidence in their faith.
Yeah.
But also, second, for non-believers, help clear away objections so they can see the truth of who Jesus is and understand the gospel.
Yes. And if there has ever been a day where Christians need to be equipped with rational, logical responses to objections to the Christian faith, that day is today. We're facing now, as the church, issues that, in my view, are unprecedented in the history of the Christian church in America. And I know that's saying a lot, but with everything that's going on in our world today, it seems to me, Sean, that the church should really be doubling down on apologetics and teaching their fellowships, their congregants, some very simple ways that they can have conversations with their friends, neighbors, coworkers, and answer some of these questions that are popping up. We meet people every day. I do. My listeners know this already, but I'm a bivocational pastor, so I work a full-time job as well as pastoring. So I rub elbows with people every day that have questions that they're looking for a serious response that makes sense, not just emotionally, but intellectually to them. And so it's very important that Christians take the task of understanding and learning apologetics seriously. And I'm saying all this, Sean, to lead into this. I'm wondering if you could share with our listeners a couple of things, maybe three things that Christians should be giving attention to right now. What are the top three issues or things, in your opinion, that the church is facing that we must address from an apologetic viewpoint?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this question. I would say, let me frame this in a couple ways. Number one, we have to address certain issues that come up from our culture.
Yeah.
But second, we also have to teach these timeless, important truths that maybe our culture isn't directly asking.
Yeah.
So, for example, questions like the evidence for the reliability of scriptures.
Yeah.
We see this come up in you know, Discovery Channel or History Channel shows. It's kind of, it's a common thread in our culture, but it's not the primary question our culture's asking, yet people need to know that.
Yeah.
The problem of evil. This is a huge question, probably one of the top two or three questions I get from students. Now, when there's a shooting or natural disaster, people kind of ask this a little bit, but it's a question people have always asked and they always will ask, and it's one we need to deal with. Evidence for the resurrection, the intelligent design, these are core apologetic issues that always have been there and always will be there. But then there's certain issues that seem to arise because of the culture that we're in.
Yeah.
And I would say right now that the most pressing issues tend to be moral issues.
Yeah.
In particular around the issue of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So issues of homosexuality, issues of same-sex marriage, issues related to gender, what the Bible says, but also addressing these issues outside of the scripture. Those are probably the big issues that when I talk to students from junior high to college and beyond, and I open it up for questions, it's usually related to those, which tells me that we really need to speak into those issues and help students speak truthfully. Yeah. But also with grace on them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things that I noticed in doing a little research and study for this conversation with you, Sean, is that you don't shy away from tackling the tough issues. You just mentioned several. And I took a look at your blog. And just for our listeners, I want to share some of the subject matter some of the themes that Sean has tackled, and then we're going to discuss a couple of these. But here are a few, and this could be a paraphrase of some articles, but I'm sure you'll know which ones I'm talking about. What are the core issues in the abortion debate? Should abortion be allowed for rape and or incest? Does smoking pot hurt the teenage brain? Now, that one, when I saw the article that you had written about that, I thought, boy, that is so timely today. And in fact, Ohio, those listeners who are from Ohio already know this, but Ohio in the upcoming election or voting coming up in November, we have an issue on the ballot to legalize medical marijuana as well as recreational. So very timely. You already touched on this. Why does God allow evil? 10 myths about premarital sex. Does truth even matter? Is religion the cause of violence? Those are all gems as far as cultural issues, issues that people are asking questions about. So I'd like to explore a couple of those in a little more detail, if we could, Sean. For example,
sure.
What would you tell someone who approaches you and says, you know, I'd like to talk to my family, my friends, or my coworkers about some of these hot topics, but I don't even know where to start. Where would you start the conversation related to abortion?
Well, the first thing to do is to just educate yourself a little bit on the subject. You don't have to get a doctorate. You don't have to get a master's, right. Although we certainly love to have you in our program.
Yeah.
Sometimes reading some good blogs, getting one or two good books, mm-hmm. will help you understand the issues, help you just kind of have the confidence that you can talk about this, you know, without getting defensive.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes Christians get defensive when these subjects come up because we really haven't thought through what we believe and why.
Yeah.
So I suggest doing a little bit of homework. You can read all these blogs on my site. They're quick and they're filled mm-hmm. with helpful information and stories.
Yeah.
There's also some good books that we could easily recommend. So the first thing is just to read a little bit, shore up what you know and build your confidence. Second, if you're having conversations, the best thing to do is typically just to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be the expert on all these different issues. I mean, some of these issues I'm an expert in the sense that I've really read and researched. Other ones I've read a few books. I know enough to give a thoughtful blog on it.
That's
not my area where I'm an absolute specialist, and that's why I quote and rely on other specialists in those blogs. So learn a little bit about it, but just ask questions. So if you want to talk to somebody about the abortion debate, make sure that it's in the right environment. Make sure it's the right time. You know, the Thanksgiving dinner might not be the best time to do this.
Right.
And make sure you have the right attitude about it. Say, you know, I've been reading a little bit on this issue. I'm curious. Would you be willing to share where you stand on this issue? You find out the person has a different view. Say, you know, tell me what led you to that conclusion. Why do you have those views? Have you ever read any pro-life books and really thought about it? What would change your mind, if anything? Do you have any experience with the issue of abortion? Have you ever thought about what Scripture says about it? I mean, sometimes just having a conversation, you'll learn what the other person believes. Maybe you can ask a good question that, as Greg Koch would say, puts a stone in somebody's shoe.
Yes.
That's a very, very valuable thing within itself. Mm-hmm. So just read a little bit. And then second, just engage somebody by asking questions. And there's value just in doing that.
Yes, absolutely. Those are good principles. Let me recap those for our listeners, Sean. And these really could be equally applicable to any of these issues, any hot topic that you might be talking to people about. But number one, you don't need to be an expert. You don't need to be an expert. So don't think that you have to have exhaustive knowledge on any particular subject in order to talk to somebody. Take Sean's advice and do a little research on your own so that you're comfortable with the topic. Another thing that I think this is true when we're just sharing our testimony or sharing the gospel as well as it is when we're talking about hot topic issues, and that is this. If you don't know the answer to something, don't pull something out of the air because you think you have to give an answer. It's okay to say, listen, that's a great question, and I don't really know the answer to that, but let me get back to you on that. So many times believers think that they have to answer every question that is posed to them, or else they're going to somehow lose the conversation, and that's just not true. The other thing you mentioned, Sean, I jotted all these things down while you were talking, by the way. That's how I came up with these. But keep your emotions in check. Don't let your emotions rule the day, or else it's going to be a very short conversation. And then finally, and this is a very good tactic to use, and I mean tactic in the best way. It's not manipulation at all. It's just a strategy for conversation, and that is to ask probing questions. Why do you believe that way? What is that based on? Do you have a reason? Do you have resources? And so it's always good to ask those probing questions. So on the issue of abortion, of course, that's a very timely issue today in our culture with the Planned Parenthood funding questions and the videos that have come out. And so I'm hopeful that will encourage our listener, Sean, to tackle that subject. Now, same-sex marriage, you co-authored a book with John Stonestreet. I interviewed John about a month ago, so episode will be aired soon. But you co-authored a book with him on that particular subject of same-sex marriage. How would you encourage someone to enter into a conversation? What could you tell them to help them bring that subject up?
Well, again, what I would say is if someone really wants to have thoughtful conversations about same-sex marriage, get one of two books, either the book John and I wrote on same-sex marriage. It's quick. It's an easy read. In the form of statistics, examples, good evidence to back up, you know, the traditional position. Or second, get Ryan Anderson's book, Truth Overruled. And that'll just give you the confidence to engage people in conversations and be informed about it. Second is when you're in conversations on the subject, and people often ask me any controversial subject, whether it's about abortion, or people ask my view on homosexuality or same-sex marriage, what I almost always do is ask a question back. I'll say, gosh, that's a really important question. I appreciate that you would want to know what I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, it's a sensitive subject. Do you mind if I ask a question back? And they'll say yes. I'll say, do you consider yourself an open-minded, accepting, and tolerant person of views that are different than your own? Now, what's everybody going to say?
Right.
Yes, of course.
Of course I am.
Of course. Tolerant. And then what happens? You say, okay, good, because this is such a divisive issue. I just want to make sure you're a safe person. If we end up disagreeing, that we show respect to each other.
Yeah.
And then what happens when they disagree and totally think you're wrong? They can't go, I had no idea you're so bigoted. If they do, you just say, okay, time out. You just said you were tolerant and open-minded to views different than your own.
Yeah.
Did you mean that or not?
Right.
And if they keep saying, yeah, but I didn't know you're this bigoted, then you just say, you know what? You really didn't mean what you said. This conversation is done, and mm-hmm. don't have it.
Yeah.
I think most people, if you frame it that way, you treat them respectfully, if you listen, will be willing to at least engage in a conversation on as controversial subjects as abortion and same-sex marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great response. The perhaps the most what's a good way to say this? The least talked about, but one of the most prevalent issues facing not just the culture, but sadly, the church, is the issue of pornography. And I know that you've done some research and some writing on this subject, and I know that your dad has as well. How do you go about, Sean, and even with young people, how do you go about helping them to understand the addictive power that pornography actually has? How do you broach that subject?
Man, this is a great question. I found two things are most helpful to really wake students up. Number one are stories of people who have been in pornography mm-hmm. and how it's devastated their marriage, devastated their self-image, affected them physically, their relationships. Stories like that wake people up because people can relate to stories. That's what Jesus told.
Yeah.
And he did. So you can find great YouTube stories to talk about this. I mean, there's some ex-porn stars that just talk about how the industry was so harmful and devastating mm-hmm. and hurtful for them. Those kinds of stories are really, really powerful and useful. And that would include testimonies. I mean, it talks about in, you know, Revelation about the power of the testimony, you know, defeating Satan and defeating evil. So if there's somebody in your group, or if it's your testimony, you know, obviously share it in a way that's appropriate and personable. But oftentimes when I had students in small groups who had wrestled with this and come clean and got the help they need, I would ask them, would you be willing to share this with a group? And if they're not, I won't press them. But if they are, hearing it from a fellow peer gives other students permission and gives them kind of the impetus to start talking about and mentioning and discussing, you know, possibly the addiction in their own life.
Yeah.
So stories and testimonies are great. Second is what I use is brain research.
Mm.
I mean, there is empirical evidence when we look at the brain as well as social science of the damaging effects of pornography.
Yes.
It's clear cut. You don't have to use the Bible. And I'm not saying that because I downplay the Bible, but in the minds of many students, whether right or wrong, if you can show it with the brain, if you can show it with scientific evidence, whoa, wait a minute, that kind of gets their attention.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, I go specifically in my talk, I have a talk called What's the Big Deal with Pornography? And I walk through how chemicals in the body, like oxytocin, et cetera, are put there by God to bind people together in unity, like it says in Genesis 2.
Yes.
But when somebody looks at pornography, it damages that bonding mechanism in the body. In males, the equivalent of oxytocin is called vasopressin. So I will go into specific chemicals. I'll talk about the brain. I'll talk about social science. In fact, I found an article in 2012 that was by probably four or five different authors, and it's peer-reviewed, and it specifically they cited all of the psychological and peer-reviewed literature from 2005 to 2012 and its effects on students.
Mm-hmm.
And I pull this out and I say, look, all they're doing is chronicling the evidence of how pornography affects people.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, number one, if somebody looks at pornography, it affects their self-image, not themselves. They're more likely to have a low self-image. Number two, they're more likely to be depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, they're more likely to engage in sexually risky behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, and I walk down through about 10 or 12 empirically identified negative effects of pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it to the students.
Yeah.
And partly what's in my mind while I do this is I know that deep down they realize that pornography is not the way things are supposed to be.
Right.
They might think it feels good. They might think it's fun. But I really believe deep down inside, because people are made in the image of God, they know that we shouldn't use people.
Mm-hmm.
And people do feel guilty about it. So I want to give them permission to realize, you know what, the lies in our culture aren't true.
Yeah.
Pornography is destroying you. And there's something so much better that God has in store for you. And I think when students sense that you really care and you're informed and you're not speaking with this holier than thou judgmental position, and again, you use stories and second empirical brain research, many, many students respond to that and open up the conversation and are willing to deal with the pornography addiction in their own lives.
Yeah, that's powerful, Sean. That is powerful. So you've seen, no doubt, seen a positive response to that. I just thinking as you're sharing all of this that as they're seeing these points checked off, those that that are involved in pornography are saying, "Man, that's me, that's me, that's me," and they know that they need help. So I think that's a great. Great way to go about it. Well, let's shift gears a little bit then from those kinds of issues, cultural issues, and Let's shift it more to a philosophical basis, and let's address the problem of evil, because as many times as that's been answered over the years, and it's been answered very succinctly and clearly by Christian apologists for centuries, the question still comes up: why would a good God allow this? And we can use any tragedy that's in the headlines today, someone's going to raise this question: why would God allow this or that? And how do you answer that, Sean?
Well, one of the reasons the problem of evil has always come up since the book of Job, which some would argue is the oldest book in the Bible, and still comes up today, is because we live in a fallen, broken world.
Yeah.
And until Jesus comes back and redeems the world and ends the evil and suffering, people will continue to ask this question. The other reason it continues is it's not just an intellectual question. In fact, I'm convinced that most people who ask about evil and suffering aren't really saying, give me a philosophical, logical explanation of how God, who's all-powerful and all good, can coexist with evil. I don't think right. most of them are asking that question. Rather, it's a deeply existential, personal question.
Yeah.
When we look at what's happening in the Middle East,
mm-hmm.
somebody has a friend who's been hurt or been abused, with a kid's parents divorced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it comes from a personal position of pain and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So in my own life, I try to realize whenever somebody asks me, why is there evil and suffering? Rarely will I answer just explicitly back. I'll typically say, gosh, great question. Of all the questions you can ask about God, why that question?
Mm-hmm.
And if they say, because I was reading this blog and it said God can't exist, or I was sitting in class, then we know it's an intellectual question. But typically people say, you know, my parents divorced when I was 7, or my pastor just cheated on his wife,
mm-hmm.
or whatever kind yeah. of suffering it is.
Yeah.
Then I want to address that in a personal way. And minister to that person, listen to that person, empathize with them. So whenever evil comes up, we've got to find out what's the question that's really driving mm-hmm. the question and then address that appropriately. Now, as far as intellectually, I found it helpful to just make two general points. And this raises a ton of other questions, but one is just to say, okay, we want to solve and make sense of evil, but what is evil? What is it? Before we can explain why there's evil, we got to explain what it is.
Yeah.
Well, evil is not the opposite of good. Evil actually is a corruption of good.
Yes.
So think of evil like a lie. Mm-hmm. You can't have a lie unless there's such a thing as truth.
Yes.
Because a lie corrupts and twists and is parasitic upon truth.
Yes.
You can have truth without somebody telling a lie, but you can't tell a lie unless there's such a thing as truth to be twisted.
Yes.
Well, evil is a corruption of good. You can only have evil if there's first objective good. And there can only be objective good if there is a personal God to ground it.
Yes.
C.S. Lewis makes this point in his book, Mere Christianity, when he says, as an atheist, I looked at the world and I said, there's so much injustice, there can't be a God.
Right.
And then I started to ask myself, how did I get this idea of unjust?
Yes.
Things must first be just. There must be a standard by which we can even have injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And that standard only makes sense if there's a personal God. The first thing I want to do is frame it and say, wait a minute, the mere fact that somebody's raising evil assumes there's good, and there's only good if, in fact, there's a God. Now, the other point to bring in, I know this raises other questions, is to just talk about free will. That God is
yeah.
not the author of evil. That God made human beings to be in relationship with us as an extension of his grace, an extension of his goodness. And if human beings did not have free will to love, we couldn't have things like courage. We couldn't have real relationships. We would be robots. Now, if God is going to make us with the capacity to love, we have to have the capacity to not love and to hurt and to do things that are wrong. So clearly, God thought it was worth it. And I think we could argue that as human beings, we deeply believe that free will is valuable within itself.
Yeah.
And that's underlying one of the reasons why there's evil, that ultimately, yes, God will stop all evil. He will redeem all of it, and justice will be done. But in the meantime, God has made us with free will and allows us to make choices.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's given us that free will, some people will choose to do evil.
Yeah, Yeah, and that explanation and strategy for presenting that answer to the problem of evil also underscores the basic fact that absolute truth exists and it can be known. I think that's a tool that Christians should take up again and start pressing that point, and they can weave that into the conversation, especially existential issues, as you mentioned, that are personal and deeply felt for folks that they're working with, their family members, their neighbors. When we talk about truth, Sean, would you explain for our listeners what we mean by that in an apologetic sense? When we talk about truth, it's not subjective, but it's objective. Could you explain that?
Sure. So truth is not something everybody can necessarily define, because maybe they haven't looked up or thought about it, mm-hmm. but everybody uses truth in a certain capacity.
Yeah.
Meaning that I had a student come up to me one time and said, why is truth important? And I said, well, do you want the true answer or the false answer? And the purpose was, when he's asking why truth is important, he already believed it was important and he wanted a true answer. He just didn't realize
right.
that he valued it.
Yeah.
So part of what we need to do with truth is bring to the surface how we use it, what we mean by it, mm-hmm. and just bring clarity, because there's just a lot of bad ideas that are in our culture.
Yeah.
Really, all truth is when a belief or statement matches up with reality.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. So if I say it's raining right now in San Juan Capistrano, where I live, that's a statement. If it's actually raining in reality, then my statement corresponds and it's true. If it's not raining, maybe it's snowing, maybe it's sunny, maybe it's hailing, then my statement would be false.
False.
So truth is when a belief matches up with reality. That's it. And we all use, even though the Bible doesn't define truth, it assumes that, because the ninth commandment says thou shalt not lie, and the assumption is a lie is not accurately representing or corresponding with truth.
Yes.
So even people who deny that truth exists still use this definition in the way they actually live their lives. It's inescapable. In fact, it's kind of like taking a beach ball and trying to push it under the water.
Yeah.
It just keeps popping up and won't go away. That's the way truth works. Mm. Now, the problem, though, is in our culture, there's confusion over truth in two senses. In one sense, we have something that we call subjective, which is a personal, private claim that's a matter of preference.
Mm-hmm.
Like a favorite ice cream flavor, or a favorite movie, or a favorite vacation spot. These are preferences that, if I said chocolate peanut butter ice cream is the best, that could be true for me, but not true for you, because it depends upon the subject believing it.
Right.
Objective claims are those that are true independent of what we believe about them, because of the nature of the object or the world in itself. So 2 + 2 = 4. That's an objective truth, even if you don't like it, even if you don't believe it,
right.
even if you doubt it, true, that George Washington was the first president of the United States.
Yes.
That's an objective claim that is true that you can be wrong about. Well, what happens in our culture is that we know science and math make objective claims, we know history does, but when the topic shifts to religion and moral values, often people, whether they realize it or not, will talk about truth as if it's subjective. That's why we'll hear people say, oh, that may be your truth, but not
yes.
my truth.
Yeah.
And nobody says that about math or science, but they say it about religion, they say it about morality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we bought the idea that morality and religion are subjective. Now, remember when we said with truth, it's important to bring to surface certain beliefs that we have? Well, people might say they believe morality is objective, but nobody really believes that. How can I make such a claim? My dad taught me something I'll never forget. He said, you know what someone believes about morality? Not by what they say, not by what they do, but by how they want to be treated.
Yeah.
So people say, oh, I don't believe in objective morality. It's all opinion. Mm-hmm. But then they'll cry foul when you cut in front of them in line
yeah.
or treat them unfairly, because they'll say, wait a minute, you agree. You said you would do this. You should keep your promises. You should tell the
yeah.
truth. And they will naturally, it'll bubble up from within, appeal to the subjective moral standard outside of us.
Yes.
And that's because even people that don't believe in God are made in the image of a personal God. And part of being made in God's image is that we have a moral conscience.
Yeah.
So everybody really knows, whether they can see it or not, that morality is really objective. In fact, if morality was subjective like ice cream, you can never judge anybody.
That's right.
For doing anything morally wrong.
Yeah.
Murder, genocide, rape,
yeah.
etc.
Yeah.
And yet we really do know those things are wrong. And then second, when it comes to religion, we also, what makes Christianity distinct is that it's based upon objective claims about the real world.
Mm-hmm.
That's why 1 Corinthians 15:14-17 says, if Jesus is not risen, our faith is in vain, and we are to be pitied.
Yes.
Christianity as a religious system rests upon objective claims and events in history about the resurrection of Jesus.
Yeah.
So our culture moves religion and morality to the realm of subjectivity, but if we reflect upon it and look at it, we realize that moral claims are about the objective world, and religious claims are about the objective world too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And your dad, I just want to mention, Sean, that your dad addressed this very issue, well, it's probably 30 years ago now. I remember teaching a high school Sunday school class through the Truth Matters series and utilized the DVDs and some other things. And that was one of the things I think that had the greatest impact upon those high school age students. Was understanding that and anything goes, or my truth is my truth and you can have your truth, just didn't work in real life. And that was a real learning experience for those kids. So that's a good resource if folks want to go get that. I imagine it's still available, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I absolutely think it is available. And you can find almost anything these days online.
Yeah. That's the truth. Yeah. Well, Sean, let's transition into then, how do we apply all of this? How do we bring everything that we've talked about and use the apologetic tools? How can it help the church? And really, I guess the question that I'm asking is, let's discuss for a moment or explore this idea of sound doctrinal and theological training for the church. Now, I don't want to be, I don't want to sound harsh, and I don't want to sound as if I'm pointing fingers, but I believe it's observable that a great portion of the church today has kind of left Bible teaching, doctrinal, theological training, they've kind of left that behind, and they've went on to other things, and I think it has hurt the church. It has hurt believers because they're not being equipped and trained to live an impactful life, a life of testimony as a disciple of Jesus. Do you think, well, first of all, do you agree with that assessment? And then secondly, if you do, do you think it's possible to turn the tide back towards more solid teaching in the church?
You know, I do think you're right that there is some movement away from teaching doctrine and theology and emphasizing experience.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, we also kind of live in a golden age where, because our culture is moving so much more secular, that I see a lot of people waking up saying, okay, wait a minute, we really do need doctrine and theology and apologetics.
Yeah.
So there's areas for concern, but there's also some positive steps that I see that are very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key is this. Biblically speaking, truth is meant for relationships.
Yeah.
It's not some abstract fact that we just have and store away. It's meant to shape how we live.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you look at books like Ephesians and Galatians and even Romans.
Yeah.
Paul often gives theology at the beginning of his letter.
Yes.
Very specific doctrinal teaching about the character of Jesus, the nature of the body of Christ, the nature of salvation. And then as you get towards the end of his letter, he starts applying it to relationships within the church, relationships to believers, relationships directly with God. So the key is we need theology, because theology is to inform specifically how we live. Right? If you just have theology that doesn't shape how you live, what's the point?
Yes.
But if you live a certain way uninformed by theology, then we're not living consistently with how God wants us to live.
Yes.
So the key is to teach theology as robustly, in-depthly, more than we ever have before, but go to pains to make sure that we show how that theology applies. So here's one simple thing that I do with my students. Whenever we teach some theological issue, I'll simply ask them this. I'll say, okay, how does this truth practically shape the way that we should live? So if I teach on creation, I'll just simply say, this is really true. How does this affect the way that we live? Let's talk about this. Okay, Jesus rose from the grave. If this is true, how does it shape how we live?
Yeah.
Okay, God, there's an answer to the problem of evil. If so, how does it shape how we live? So making those connections are more important, I think, really than ever, especially in how we teach apologetics today.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, I agree with that. Sean, any new projects you're working on you want to share with our listeners? Any books coming out soon, or what's going on with Sean McDowell?
Sure. I've got a book coming out very soon called The Faith of the Apostles. I've been studying over 3 years on what really happened to Paul and Peter and Thomas, and I analyze what we can actually know about their faith. It's an academic book, so it's not cheap. That if people have ever really wondered, was Peter crucified upside down? Did Thomas make it to India? Was Bartholomew really skinned?
Yeah.
Amazingly, no one's taken an academic look on this, and there's a lot of really poor ideas that are just kind of passed on uncritically.
Yeah.
And I take a look at that. It was a fun, eye-opening, powerful project, and I can't wait for it to come out in just a few weeks.
Oh, so
second, one with my dad coming out early next year is called The Beauty of Intolerance. The beauty of intolerance, and we aim to clarify what is intolerance, what is tolerance, how historically have we gotten to where we're at today, how can the church specifically respond to this issue of tolerance that's really become one of the leading virtues of our day. So those are a couple of fun projects that I think are challenging, eye-opening, certainly relevant to your audience that might help out.
And The Faith of the Apostles, you say, is coming out in about a month?
That one comes out, actually, the end of October to early November,
kind of
in that era.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay, awesome. So be looking for that, folks. And then The Beauty of Intolerance, that right there. Well, both of these are very interesting, but I'm particularly going to be looking for the Beauty of Intolerance. And that comes out after the first of the year?
That'll be, I think, early February 2016.
Yeah, February 20. Okay, excellent. How can people connect with you on social media? Are you on Facebook or Twitter? I know you're on Twitter.
One of my favorite social media is Twitter. Yeah. I tweet somewhat regularly, helpful quotes.
Yeah.
I tweet all my blogs out, my quick videos. Each week I do just a 2 to 3 minute video of kind of a big apologetic question people are asking. Is Jesus the only way? Why is there evil, etc.? And I also other helpful articles that I find related to apologetics, kind of youth and culture. So probably 6 to 8 times a day, if someone kind of wants to know what's going on in the world of culture and apologetics, my Twitter feed might be helpful. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. My website is seanmcdowell.org, and there's lots of freebies there, as well as links to the resources if they want to take advantage of those.
Okay. And on your website, seanmcdowell.org, do you have your speaking schedule on there too?
Front page. You just scroll down, you'll see exactly where I'm speaking. And would love to meet any of your listeners. If they happen to make it to an event, come up and say hi.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Well, Sean, I've enjoyed the conversation. I appreciate you taking the time to be on Soaring Eagle Radio with me today.
Mike, thank you for having me. You're doing great work. Be encouraged, and please, please keep it up.
Amen. Thank you, my brother. God bless. Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world,
but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek Him.